Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen, and we're going to be talking a lot about things that fly, or at least want to fly in the case of a turkey. We have John DePew from the DNR. He's a wildlife biologist, and we're going to be, like I said, talking about some wildlife issues, bats, falcons, turkeys, all of these things. Where John, these are passions of yours, and you're one of the experts in our area.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Rick. Yeah, indeed. We've got a number of things going on here. I don't know where you want to start.
Well, we were talking just before the show got started about bats. And now, I live up in Calumet, and I see bats quite often during the summer months. They seem to like some of the old abandoned structures from time to time.
Sure.
And it's always best to see them at twilight. And it's, I've got a daughter who's, it's always kind of fun to freak out your daughter. And you're like, you see that over there? And you can kind of tell the difference between the bat and a bird flying at the time because of the flitty way that the bats fly. It doesn't really work. She loves bats.
Yeah, good.
And we've talked about maybe putting up a bat house at our house in order to help with mosquitoes because, I'm right on the edge of the woods, so sitting out in the backyard during the summer evenings can be kind of painful if you don't douse yourself with insect repellent. I'm going to ask you that. I'm going to start right there. If you have a bat house, does that actually help with the mosquitoes in your area?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Bats of different species of bats eat different types of insects. But often one of the bat species, little brown bats, that do reside in bat boxes eat a large number of mosquitoes per night. But they also, bats of, again, different sizes and different species eat a lot of moths. They eat a lot of flies. They eat a lot of insects on a nightly basis. So you would see some impact by having a bat box and hosting a roosting colony in your bat box in your backyard.
Now, I realize this is probably a fifth grade level question, and not to insult fifth graders who would know the answer to this already. But do bats pose any danger to humans, as sometimes the fears may give?
Yeah, in general, probably not. There's the caveat, and there's always the potential for rabies exposure, and that is a biggest concern if a person. Or a pet, for that matter, is actually bitten by a bat, then you want to seek your doctor and medical advice right away. But that said, less than 1% of the natural bat population has rabies, so it's a very, very low chance. Oftentimes, people think that bats are like coming for their hair, or get tangled in their hair, or dive bombing their head, And if you've been out and bats might be fluttering down close to your head, what they're doing is eating the insects that are attracted to you, right? We probably all have that fishing in the evening and twilight or whatever, and the bats are kind of coming a little closer than you like, and you think they're coming for you, and indeed they're not. They're eating the insects that are attracted to you. So, there's not a lot to worry. They're beneficial and really important to the ecosystem.
We have a lot of bats up here.
Yeah, we do have a lot of bats. Certainly our the landscape in which we live, forested, a lot of water, and with our break in agriculture and openings is ideal for most of the bat species. So that's that's a great summertime habitat that we have for them. And then also, as I was mentioning before, of course, here in the Copper Country and on all the way down through to Gogebic County, we've got a legacy of mining, has hundreds of big mines and small mines and semi-active mines, but there's a lot of mines which provide wintering habitat, hibernacula for bats. And we have, a lot of the sites that aren't completely flooded to the top have bats in them in the winter that are hibernating over winter. So yeah, we've got a lot of bats here in Western UP.
So do you get ever an opportunity to go into the mines and those where the bats are?
Yeah, absolutely. So
you're very brave.
Yeah, I've been working on bats for a few years, and so we conduct a survey annually, and we try to go to sites about every other year, every third year. Our presence does disturb them to a degree, so we try to minimize that, but at the same time, we're trying to keep a tab on what's happening with our bat populations. So yeah, I've been into some of the bigger mines here, smaller mines here. You know, we go in the winter, which can be a challenge sometimes, but it's they're great places. So one of the things that we're monitoring for is your listeners, and you might be familiar with a disease called white nose syndrome, which started on the East Coast, first discovered in 2006, and has spread west. And you know, we're into our third year of infection here in Michigan, and that's we're starting to see some significant population declines from the disease. And you know, it's a concern when we're talking major declines in bat populations. The impact to the ecosystem is unknown, but of concern. And so we're kind of monitoring those populations and seeing how they are faring here in Michigan compared to other parts of the country, and looking at infection rates and you know, how those bats are faring. So it's actually, you know, getting out underground is fun. Yeah, they're interesting places to go.
How is white nose syndrome spread?
White nose syndrome is spread from bat to bat. The cause of the disease is a fungus. Pseudogyrum nasus destructans is what it's called. It's a fungus that is native to Europe, and it's, we suspect that it came over to New York, the first site that we discovered this disease. Scientists discovered this disease on some caving gear. So the spores are extremely virulent, and they probably came over on some dirt and, you know, on someone's boots and ropes or helmets or whatever, and then sloughed off when they went caving in a site in New York. And the conditions in which that are in the high vernacular, both caves and mines, that the bats need to overwinter, high humidity around 40 degrees Fahrenheit, are the perfect conditions for this fungus to grow. So the fungus grows and spreads and gets on the bats, and the bats live in these tight communities where they're often roosting, you know, where they're touching or on top of each other. So it's easy for the fungal spores to transfer from bat to bat to bat. So you might have a bat cave or high vernacula of, let's say, 10,000 bats in the winter, and those bats will fly to, you know, potentially 5,000, 8,000 different locations to over summer, to summer roost. And when they're summering, they're you know, in contact with bats from other caves and mines that weren't infected, but the spores spread from individual to individual, and then those bats from a quote-unquote clean site bring those spores back and infect the colony and the site. So that's how this disease has spread so rapidly in just, you know, 10 years from the East Coast, you know, to the Midwest.
What are the symptoms of the disease? How does it affect the bats individually?
Well, you know, for its namesake, they grow the white fungus, and it makes their nose look white. It grows white fungus on their wings, but it can damage their tissue, their wing tissue. And what happens is that typically when a bat is hibernating, they go into hibernation and they'll have these arousal bouts where they're kind of wake up, shift around, take a drink, move around within the minor cave. About every 21 to 30 days, but the fungus is causing them physiologically to work harder, and they arouse about every 7 days. So their fat reserves, their energy stores that they have for the winter, get used up really quickly, and often they'll run out of fat and, you know, energy in February or sometime in March, and they'll go out flying looking for insects, and there just aren't insects to eat in February and March. And they'll die to exposure, or just they can just die from, you know, burning up all of their energy right in the cave or mine. And so a lot of folks have been seeing bats flying around in February, March, which is unusual. And indeed, you know, they're correct. It is unusual that bats are flying around that time of year, but that's what's happening, is those bats are looking for something to eat and there isn't any. You know, some bats, might've been lucky. You know, we had some warm days earlier in March here, and there were some moths and insects I saw flying around, so there is some opportunity for food, But in general, a lot of those bats are in trouble that they're seeing.
The disease, is it in and itself fatal to the bat, or is it these conditions afterwards that cause the bat to die?
Both.
Okay, so yep. Even if they had enough food, the disease will eventually catch up with them?
Yeah, for the most part, yeah. Mm. So we, the larger bat and scientific community at large are working on coming up with different types of treatments. And Michigan DNR hosted a treatment workshop in Grand Rapids last summer, where we brought scientists and land managers together to try to come up with some approaches on coming up with different treatments for the disease, to treat individual bats and treat sites and so on, and get everyone in the same room to see if we can, you know, pave the way forward with some solutions.
When will those start to be implemented?
Well, we are somewhat already participating in some of the field trials. So there's a lot of laboratory testing taking place right now in different university labs and research labs across the country. And we've participated in some trials, but they're just some of the stuff is just being going through the vetting process in the lab to make sure it's safe, to do field trials in the environment. And we'll participate in those trials as they come available. And, you know, hopefully as soon as this next fall, you know, we'll start doing the work this late summer, early fall, and get those field trials, help with whatever research we can.
Yeah, I sure hope so. Since, I mean, it doesn't sound like there's a whole lot you can really do other than to monitor the situation right now out in the field.
Yeah, that's one thing. I think the other thing, too, is, bat boxes are something, but, the disease is killing the bats. But probably the biggest thing, too, is that if you have bats in your attic or human structure, you know, we're asking folks if they can avoid excluding the bats or kicking them out of...
No, you're asking a lot.
Well, not there's a timing to do it. So the females are going to give birth up to her young sometime at the end of May, early June. And those young... they're not really physically strong enough to leave on their own until sometime in August. So, you know, we're asking if you can either seal up your holes in your attic or your barn or whatever it is right now prior to the bats returning, then you won't have that issue. If they're starting to give birth, it's the middle of June and you hear something, if it's an emergency case, sure. And there's no law against it. We're just asking folks if they wait till sometime at the end of August, September, those young of the year, and all the bats will be able to fly on their own and get out of there, and then you can do all your sealing up of your cracks and holes and whatnot, and then you know we're not killing bats or jeopardizing more bats recruitment to the population. Yeah. Okay.
And I'm just kind of kidding. I mean, yes, if you have bats, I mean, nobody wants to have bats, but if you do have them and you're in your barn or other structure, so for the summer anyways, you'll have less mosquitoes anyways.
Yeah, if you have some specific questions, give me a call. We've got all kinds of methods to help you out. Yeah.
All right, let's move on to another bird. And don't email me. I know bats are not birds. Another flying animal, the peregrine falcons at the Portage Lake Lift Bridge.
Yeah, let's talk about it. So the male and female are back already this year. Of interest to the public, Copper Country Audubon has placed a second camera on the south tower. So now both nest boxes have a live webcam that you can watch real time. The birds on the nest boxes. You know, we're hoping that that they'll nest. They have the past 2 years nested and reared chicks, which we've banded the past several years, and we, you know, if they have successful nests, we'll also go up there and band the chicks of the year. So you could probably post the link, but you can see it at pasty.com/nestbox.html.
Definitely, I'll post that link up as well. Where did the falcons come from, and why is there a box up there in the first place?
Well, yeah, so this is a great, interesting collaborative project. With Michigan Department of Transportation, They came to us and said, "Hey, we kind of have a lot of pigeons pooping on the bridge, and you know, loads of poop can be corrosive and destructive to paint and exposed metal and such." So, you know, they've had counterparts in other parts of the country, even other parts of the state, where they've been successful in having peregrine falcons nest on the structure or nearby, and they certainly help disperse and reduce the number of pigeons on the bridge structure. And they said, "Hey, you know, can we put a nest box up there and get some falcons on the bridge?" And we didn't have any help, because hacking is when you like bring some chicks in and then kind of help rear them. We didn't have, but we were able to get the nest boxes up, and sure enough, some peregrines showed up and checked it out for a year. And then the next year, this pair came back and started nesting and raising chicks. And they've been rearing chicks. They've been coming ever since. And it's a great you know, kind of success story, because they are doing a good job of controlling pigeons, and that's what they consume, one of their prey items. And you know, the public gets to watch the peregrines, of course, from the Portage Library. They have a spotting scope you can try to see them from through the windows, and you know, with Copper Country Audubon, there's the live webcam. So it's a great collaborative kind of success story there. So it's a neat time of year to watch birds and see the falcons.
These falcons are amazing birds of prey.
Yeah.
They fly at incredible speeds. Yeah. They're efficient killing machines, and they have no shortage of food over at the Portage Lake Lift Bridge.
No, they don't. Yeah, it's there's plenty of food around, and you know, it's a good time of year, not only just for peregrines, but you know, a lot of birds coming back, and we have bird watching is one of the growing pastimes in the country. We have a lot of opportunities around the Copper Country. One place I just want to plug real quick is our Sturgeon River Sloughs Wildlife Management Area in Chassel, and both in Arnheim. These big wetland complexes that we manage are for waterfowl and a number of great migratory bird species. So, you know, if you haven't had a chance to get out, you want to see some interesting birds, you know, please go visit those sites and check out the wood ducks that are coming back, and all kinds of fun and interesting birds.
Yeah, it doesn't cost anything to do.
Absolutely not.
The information's all on the DNR website to help you kind of, you know, find your way around.
Yep.
And, you know, it's we have so many great opportunities like this. There's rarely a time you can say, you know, there's just nothing to do.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, absolutely.
Did the work that's been done on the lift bridge for all this time, when did that start? A year and a half ago, somewhere around there. Did it affect the peregrines at all?
You know, interesting. We work with MDOT to try to do a few things to reduce their impact. One thing that they did is there's some windows on both on the insides of the towers at the top that they cover to try to, you know, reduce startling the birds. But the nest boxes kind of face away from those windows, and you know, they successfully reared chicks last year during the work, the construction and repairs that they were doing, without much impact. And certainly, you know, MDOT tries to work cognizant of the birds being there. Of course, they're not there. The birds aren't there in the winter, so that's not a problem. But it seemed like, you know, they did the best they could to avoid, and they're successful. So yeah, it was great.
And the original mating pair has returned. Any idea where the chicks have gone?
No, we don't. And that's one of the reasons we banned is people will pick up those band numbers or see the band numbers, and there's a national database, and we haven't heard of any reports of those bands. But you know, as they grow older and established, and we'll hopefully get some information on where those chicks have gone.
Okay. Are the falcons territorial? If another pair wanted to move in, will they sort of keep them out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
They prefer turds. Yeah.
So
yeah.
They're not about to rent out space in that nest box. So.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk turkey.
Let's stand birds. Yeah. Time of year.
Okay. Now, I'm amazed driving down any rural road here in the Upper Peninsula during the warmer weather months. You see a lot of turkeys.
Mm-hmm.
And but I don't hear all. You don't always hear a lot about turkey hunting, though. I would imagine this is a very prime location for it.
Yeah. You know, so our turkey population has been, you know, compared to historically, you know, we have turkeys here, which maybe historically we didn't have. So very stable, if not increasing, populations of turkeys. And I think a lot of hunters are starting to realize that there's a great opportunity. They're starting to see turkeys around, even up in Keweenaw County. And, is this an opportunity? And indeed it is. We do have a hunting season here in the UP on turkeys. You'll see that it's a lottery system, but any leftover tags you can buy over the counter. And last I checked a few days ago, there are still, a couple thousand leftover tags that you could pick up. The season starts April 18th and goes through May 31st. And, there are turkeys, all around the five western counties that I'm responsible for. And it's a great opportunity to get out for a spring hunt. And I can tell you firsthand, it is a blast. Turkey hunting is a lot of fun because it's an active hunt. You're calling the turkeys in and they're talking back to you and they're getting closer and things get exciting. And, you might not even get, a chance to get one, but just, to talk to them and work that hunt. It's a real exciting and fun time to spend the spring. So, I encourage folks, there's a lot of opportunity there to get out. Again, they're kind of everywhere, like you suggest, and might as well, take advantage of the resource. They are, it can be a challenging hunt. They're actually smarter, pretty smart, maybe smarter than a lot of people think. They do fly.
They do fly.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
They do fly. They roost in trees, so they spend the night, in the tree branches, and they come down. And it's a fun and great opportunity to get out in the spring. Their license is available. You can pick up over the counter. We brought some turkeys up kind of the southern part of the UP, and they've been kind of expanding their range. And certainly, kind of historically, our deep snow is a challenge for turkeys. But, some of the supplemental feeding that takes place. And I think turkeys have been able to key in on oak, acorns, and, a number of our other fruits that we have that bear through the winter. And, seem to be doing pretty well even in our our big snow country here. So,
as I said, I don't know much about turkeys. All the turkeys that I get, they're not moving very fast.
Yeah.
All I have to do is pluck the turkey out of the cooler at the grocery store. They're not going anywhere. So it's kind of surprising that we have our increasing turkey population, but we're seeing wildlife in other areas drop for different reasons, the weather, the predators, different things. But, what do you think is making the turkey population resilient and growing?
Well, that is a good question. Certainly, I think the turkeys are keying in on places where people are feeding their livestock.
Okay.
They'll get it. We hear it from farmers. Regulators, they're feeding hay out to their cattle and sheep or whatever, and the turkeys find those places. And same with the winter deer supplemental feeding sites, is the turkeys are keying in on those sites, and certainly that's helping to a degree those turkeys get through the winter.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah.
It's good to be fed through the winter. I get some of the regulations with turkey hunting, if you get a license, is there a limit to the number of turkeys you can get?
You can take one bearded turkey in the spring, and then there's also a fall hunt, but you'll need a separate tag for that.
Okay.
Yep.
For people that might try turkey hunting, since you sound like you do it, any tips that you would have for them besides don't hunt where you are?
they kind of like find a kind of an opening or a grassy opening or a field, and set up at the edge of it, kind of at the edge in the woods. It helps to pre-scout before the season, so the next couple weeks do some scouting and see where you see groups of turkeys. And then you set up at the edge. You gotta get up early. That's the one thing about turkey hunting, is you gotta get up early. Work on your calls. I'll start working on my calling here in the next couple weeks. Drive the dog crazy, but but that's there's all kinds of information on the internet. You can
okay.
If you never tried it before, or give me a call. I'm not an expert, but again, I enjoy it. It's a good time.
All right. Do you deer hunt as well?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let us say, compare the two experiences.
Turkey. Well, like I said, I think turkey hunting's fairly active. I know, you can rattle and call in some deer, but that's kind of more exclusively how you hunt turkeys, is you're calling them in. So it's a really active, springtime is really active. So it's fun to be out early mornings in the spring because, you know, the birds are back and they're singing and they're chirping and animals are running around. And the turkeys, when you're in a decent spot, like I said, you might not even have a shot at a turkey, but if you're calling them and they're talking back to you and they're getting closer, and just that interaction of kind of calling back and forth with a turkey, and that real action is really exciting and fun. So for me, it's, you know, it's kind of, there's some action going on there. So it's, you know.
It sounds enjoyable.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for coming in. It's been a great talk.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad to be here. Happy to do it.
Copper Country Today, we'll be right back.